Brad Hayes, we've had a whole bunch of elections happening around, and I'm fascinated by the fact that de Blasio, the mayoral Democrat mayoral candidate in New York, is a self-identified progressive. Here in Albany, New York, where we're speaking from right now, self-identified progressive, I think, is fair to say, named Kathy Sheehan, wins and brings with her a whole cast of characters in the city council who are also of similar persuasion. We also are seeing news that we now have the greatest spread of wealth. More people are rich and more people are poor than ever before in this country. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think to answer the first half of that question, it is interesting in the sense that we are seeing progressives emerge out of Democratic strongholds. And maybe, you know, just a kind of a knee jerk, that doesn't seem that surprising. But in some ways, it actually is, because, you know, in the past, we've seen a lot of moderate Democrats. But now we're beginning to see some Democrats we associate with the left coming out of places like New York City and Albany, Democratic strongholds. And that may actually be in some ways a response. Certainly, we've seen a lot of discussion about this in New York City, where Bloomberg's mayoralship is in many ways being condemned through de Blasio's victory, right? That the heir apparent Quinn had a rather poor showing in the Democratic primary. And people said that you couldn't vote against Bloomberg, so you could vote against Quinn. And who to vote for? Well, here's de Blasio, someone that's running on a pretty kind of leftist campaign.
Although, wouldn't you say, Brad, that he'll be heading to the center as they always do?
A little bit, but keep in mind that, you know, in New York City, if you're a Democrat, you likely win. Now, obviously, there are outliers to that, but...
Well, here's an outlier. For 20 years, that New York City hasn't had a Democratic mayor.
It's true, but, I mean, the Bloomberg, of course, ran kind of as a Republican, then independent, on almost the left side of the spectrum. If you look at his policies and the like, particularly on the use of government, it reminds you more of a Democrat than a Republican. But that being said, I think you raise an important point that, you know, nothing is a lock. And so you may see some moderation in those policies. But I think de Blasio actually will continue to beat the drum on things like stop and frisk and say that these policies are ultimately harmful to New York City residents. And then we have to do away with them. Right? Something that we haven't seen coming out of New York in several decades.
Well, that's so interesting. There's so many directions that you are leading us in, not the least of which is just to sort of nail this down. So do you think that this reaction in electing the progressive out of this huge field of Democratic wannabes turns out to be a reaction to the economic split between the rich and the poor, and saying, now you've gone just too far and we want to rein you in a little, you know, rich people?
Right. It's part of the storm anyway. I can't quite peg it down to a single variable, but I think that's part of it, right? I mean, you know, the notion that the 1% is in our vernacular now, right? That's a part of our dialogue. We all kind of know what that means. When you simply say the 1%, we're not thinking about milk now. We're thinking about the disparity in income in the United States, the disparity of wealth in the United States. And that's an important part now of our politics, and it's an important part of the dialogue that's going on the left. And it seems to be resonating where the left is particularly strong.
Now, enough on the left. Let's go to the right. Let's talk about what's happened in the Republican Party. You know, my parents were perfectly capable of voting for a Jacob Javits or a Rockefeller or a Lindsay. You don't see those people anymore.
No, you really don't. I mean, you know, when we talk about, you know, kind of moderates in the Republican Party today, we're talking about people that are really on the right. It's just that they're not as far right as, the Tea Party wing, for example.
But every Republican congressman has to think every time there's a vote on Syria, a vote on this, a vote on that, that they had better be, for want of a better word, politically acceptable. In other words, otherwise they're going to lose to somebody who's even more right-wing than they are.
Yeah, or at least you have to protect against that challenge, right? Because even if you win the challenge, it may ultimately weaken you. It might weaken you in terms of the resources that you have to spend and the like. And I mean, there is something really interesting. I mean, Republicans who self-identify with the Tea Party are increasingly dissatisfied with their Republican leadership, right? It's now less than 3 in 10 Republicans who identify with the Tea Party approve of their leadership, right? There's a lot of dissatisfaction. There's a lot of fragmentation within the Republican Party between, you know, kind of the old guard, the establishment, and this kind of new Tea Party firebrand element in the
zealot
party. Yeah, you might say zealot. And because, you know, I think they're very committed to their principles, right? Now, a lot of people might think and disagree with those principles. But, you know, we see that in discussions about to shut down the government, right? That a lot of the Tea Party elements are quite comfortable with shutting down government if in fact it means that you have a stronger negotiating position on things like the Affordable Care Act and trying to undo what was done there. So I think you're right that there really is a good deal of strife within the Republican Party. And that has in some ways helped push the party in a much more conservative direction, and one that it's hard to get away from until, you know, I'll say the Tea Party movement weakens.
So, Brad Hayes, let me ask you this question. There was a very low turnout in these primaries. How come people don't exercise the franchise?
That's a good question. Political scientists have struggled with that for years, and we always see particularly low turnout in kind of off-year elections. We see it where the profile of the election is lower. Primaries always have lower turnout than generals. So there are a bunch of reasons. You know, where we saw it locally, you know, where the turnout was particularly low, say in the Albany elections, you know, it does also raise some important questions going back to your issue of kind of wealth disparity about poverty. We know that socioeconomic status shows up in who turns out to vote and who doesn't.
The more money you have, the more likely you are to vote.
Yeah. And, you know, we know that the poverty rate in Albany is somewhere around, I think, 30%.
Huge.
And that's really sizable, right? And if you look at other things, if you look at the way—
Yes, but why don't— Let me stop you and say, sure. But why don't people vote in their self-interest? So in other words, you would think that if everybody who was poor in this country came out, you would never have, you know, you wouldn't have much of a Republican Party, but they don't.
Yeah, and I'm going to just state the obvious. It just doesn't seem to work that way. And so we talk about stakeholder society, right, and that how important it is to have a stake in turning people out to vote. We talk about that a lot in terms of young people voting, right, that young people are transient, they're not connected to a community, that they don't own a house yet, et cetera, et cetera. Well, again, if you're looking at a place like Albany where owner occupancy rates are, I think, around 40%, which is well below the national average. You know, again, it might speak to the ways in which people don't feel like they have a full stake, and so that they don't have the full incentives to show up on election day. That may not be the right way to think about it if you are the voters, but at the same time, that seems to affect the incentives for people to turn out and vote.
Well, that's as close to an answer as we're going to get. It's always been perplexing for all of us political scientists. It is fascinating, and there's a lot more to be said about it. Brad Hayes, we love it when you come in and talk to us and tell us what you think. Thanks so much.
Thank you.